You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Carrie Young, in for Tiziana Deering. Well, the world of technology can be an exciting space full of possibility, but there can also be a dark side to it, too. Boston Globe reporter Aaron Pressman covers it all and is here again in the studio to talk about it with us. So welcome back, Aaron.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to start with this true crime tech story that you've been following for a few years now, actually. And just to start the context here, it all centers around a Natick couple, Ina and David Steiner. They ran a tech blog out of their home, and then they started getting harassed, they say, by the well-known e-commerce company eBay in early 2019. So can you take it from there for us, Aaron? What happened?
Sure. Ina and David are a great couple. They've been married for decades. They met in the 80s, and they built this business because they were interested in selling things on eBay, and then they started writing about it on the internet, and it became a whole, it took on a life of its own. It's called E-Commerce Bites, a great little website that covers what happens at eBay and Amazon and all those places. Unfortunately, in 2019, eBay itself was under a lot of pressure from investors and Wall Street, and they sort of kind of got freaked out a little bit about the way that E-Commerce Bites was covering them, and it then descended into this bizarre scandal.
Right, and I want to talk a little bit about the nuance of the way the Steiners had been talking about eBay, right? Like, you mentioned that some of their business practices had kind of changed, and that's what changed their coverage. Can you describe that a little more for us?
Well, I think in the early days, E-Commerce Bites was to help people like you and me, like selling baseball cards or Legos or something. But over time, eBay kind of shifted away from that, and eBay was kind of encouraging larger sellers and stuff. So what the Steiners did was their newsletter was more about kind of covering eBay as a business. And I really, you know, sometimes we write that they critically covered eBay or something. Like, they just covered eBay. There were comments on articles. Sometimes people in the comments got very nasty, but their articles were pretty straightforward. And sometimes eBay made mistakes or did things we might all question that they just covered.
Okay. So this all started then with the harassment that they faced. A neighbor told David that their fence had been tagged with the word Fidomaster. And Ina recognized that as a name of an anonymous commenter on their newsletter or their blog, as we mentioned, E-Commerce Bites. But it did get progressively stranger and more disturbing. And I have to say, when I read your stories about this, my jaw just dropped, being like, seriously? That this is what happened? And what I mean by that is bags with embalmed pig remains were delivered to them, live spiders. So who was behind all of this? Like, do we know that it was because eBay didn't like some of the coverage that they were getting?
So a couple of, basically this got all unraveled by the police and ultimately the FBI, and the U.S. Attorney's Office brought a case and seven people all pled guilty to criminal charges. So we kind of—
Seven people.
We kind of know the facts. And there's two pieces of it. One is sort of the high-level piece where the CEO of eBay and other people were upset with the coverage. And then there's the lower level where people in sort of the global security team got this message and decided on their own, it seems, to engage in this elaborate harassment and stalking campaign. And maybe the idea was they were going to kind of then show up at the end and say, like, we're eBay, we're here to help and save you from this terrible stalking campaign, which we did.
So, and you mentioned that these employees received a message. Was that the take them down message that they got from eBay CEO
Devin Wenig, right. So, you know, there's a civil lawsuit going on about this right now that the Steiners have filed. So it's very contentious to talk about, like, who did what. But it's clear that the CEO was not pleased with what was going on with their website and sent to some of his top direct reports, like the head of communications, this thing, take her down. You know, there's going to be a whole court battle about what those three words ultimately mean and how responsible he is. But it's in the lower level where the security department was run by a former CIA operative, Jim Bao, who's now serving 5 years in prison. And he seems to be the mastermind of this whole crazy, we're going to harass them and then we're going to save them kind of strategy.
Right. Well, so David Steiner has an opinion on what those three words mean. He was on 60 Minutes recently, and he says that he really thinks that those three words kind of make Wenig's involvement clear. Here's what he said.
If you have a dog that is trained to attack, and then you give them the command, take her down, aren't you as responsible for the damage that happens?
And what do you make of that? How do you respond to that comment from David?
I mean, it's very emotional. You can hear the emotion in his voice. When you talk to David and Ina, you can see that these are people who have been deeply impacted and affected by what was done to them and the terror that they faced and the fears they still have today. In a court of law, there are certain standards for, you know, being held financially responsible for conduct of underlings. eBay did an investigation from an outside law firm that found that Devin Wenig did not know in advance of what was going to be done and did not specifically ask for these terrible things to be done. So his lawyers are leaning very heavily on that, as you might imagine.
Right. Okay, so we are talking tech, potentially the dark sides of tech, with Aaron Pressman, a Boston Globe reporter. And, you know, I know you have been covering or interviewing the Steiners for a few years now. What about this story has stuck to you maybe the most?
I think the real question goes down to how extraordinary was this? Was this the only time this ever happened? A number of the people involved have worked at all different companies around Silicon Valley, Microsoft, eBay. Jim Bao worked for Bill Gates. So it's always been a question of whether this is just the one time it happened or the one time they got caught.
That's a really great question. I wonder, too, this case is still ongoing legally. Why hasn't this settled yet? Do you have a sense of that at all?
I think the two sides are very far apart in what they think the proper restitution should be. eBay, in its securities filings, has said they have set aside about $60 million to cover this and two other legal cases. So that's sort of where their head is at. And I guess the Steiners and their lawyer, Rosemary Scapiccio, is thinking something higher.
Okay. So we're going to switch gears here a little bit to from talking about true crime to AI. And that's another story that you've been following, another subject, really, that you've been following closely. And, you know, you have talked with us about how Boston's place in the AI tech landscape is growing, maybe. So basically, the gist is that Boston is a place for AI innovation, but it's not the place. And you have written about an interesting theory as to why. So can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Well, the very term artificial intelligence came from some people at MIT in the 50s. So originally, we were super duper duper in the middle of AI.
It's a very distinct Boston connection.
Exactly. Kendall Square in the 80s, there were a whole bunch of companies. It was known as AI Alley. There's a Globe story from like 1985 about AI Alley. But that kind of AI, which involved like making intricate software programs that like imitated the way human vision works or human hearing works, has not turned out to be really the winning strategy. And I'm sure everyone has heard of ChatGPT at this point.
It's
the way that ChatGPT and the newer AI programs work is totally different. And it involves sort of like a very simple, dumb software program going through a ton of data and kind of teaching itself how to do something like speak or write an essay. So that's not where Boston is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, let's see. So you spoke with Jeremy Wertheimer, who founded ITA Software. It's one of Boston's biggest AI companies. Then worked with Google after the company bought ITA in 2010. He said the initial AI program at ITA was about 2 million lines of code. You know, if he were still at the company today, he said he'd only design an AI with about 100 lines of code. And so 2 million to 100, I feel like you couldn't do the same thing with such fewer lines of code. What do you make of that?
Well, what happens is with these modern large language models, they teach themselves and they create on their own, without human intervention, this huge predictive model that has millions of lines of code in and of itself, but no humans wrote those. And then it decides, if you've ever played with ChatGPT, it's almost magical the way it can kind of write a sentence and then write another sentence. It's going to its own self-created huge model to do that.
Okay, that's a really good way of describing it. Okay, so Wertheimer says adopting a more West Coast style when it comes to tech that's more willing to take risks could create more advances in AI. But I feel like, isn't that kind of what people have hated or lamented about Silicon Valley for years, that move fast and break things kind of approach? What do you make of that?
Don't you think it's ironic that a few years ago, everybody was criticizing Google and Microsoft and Facebook, now Meta, for moving too fast and breaking things and messing up elections and whatnot. And now ChatGPT has kind of entranced everyone and everyone's like, oh, move faster, break more things.
Break more things. Is that even possible with tech? Let's see. And so Boston also has a strong ecosystem of life sciences research, especially when it comes to healthcare, pharma companies, even climate technology. So what do you think? Can integrating AI into other fields, maybe some of the fields that we have a pretty good grasp on, could that elevate Boston's status in the AI world?
I think that's sort of been Boston's strong point in tech over the last 10 or 20 years, which is maybe things are invented in California or Toronto or wherever, but we have these incredible ecosystems here around biotech or financial services, and we can create applications. So hopefully that's what's going to happen, is maybe we'll apply the way ChatGPT is used at Fidelity or one of our other big famous firms and create some really good apps.
An interesting idea. Okay, we're talking about tech with Aaron Pressman, Boston Globe reporter. And let's see, what are you looking out for next when it comes to AI? What are maybe some of the forefront developments that are coming out, especially from Boston?
Well, one of the things that's suddenly happening is you're suddenly starting to get some of the top researchers questioning whether ChatGPT and the related models really are leading to what everybody ultimately wants, which is called general AI, like a program that can just actually reason and be like a person. ChatGPT, as we all know, like hallucinates and makes things up. It's terrible at math. It can't really tell reality from fantasy. So the next thing that's going to happen, I think, is a debate and maybe a resolution of that debate of whether to keep going with these ChatGPT models and break more things or whether there's a better answer.
Okay. All right, Aaron, we have to leave it there. Always interesting to have you on the show. That was Aaron Pressman, Boston Globe reporter. Thanks for coming, Aaron.
Thank you.